This episode is brought to you by the Slash and Cast Podcast Network. Learn more at slashandcast.net.
You cut me too deep. I think I'm dying here, man.
Welcome to the 3B Video Deep Cut Podcast.
Watch a few movies, take a few notes.
It was fun.
Aw, yeah. It's that time again for another bi-weekly podcast with your hosts, Rotten Roger DeMarco and...
Motorist, watch your prize for flight!
Evil in the back.
Dude, yeah, that movie made me really seek out that song. I'm not gonna lie.
What's new? That's probably the only time we have interest in seeking out any kind of particular song. Is like, well, now we're gonna associate it with this fucking movie all the time now, so let's listen to it.
And that is right, we are of course nearing the very end of our trek once around the lake, if you will, with our coverage now of the 2009 Friday the 13th reboot, remake, reimagining, money making for New Line Cinema.
Super money making. This was barely. I think I saw like a $20 million budget and made $80, $90 million. So it's like, that is turning a fucking profit.
For sure. And it was, you know, because the Friday the 13th films, it's a pretty standard formula. So I think you can get away with having not a massive budget, and then you can turn a profit if you give the fans what they want. And as much as I kind of despise Shannon and Swift, not necessarily a big fan of them.
They're first run advocates for the fans' voices.
Yeah, but I think that this movie is super solid. But that's not to say that when it first came out, for whatever reason, I was still in my old man curmudgeon, like, you can't remake things, you can't do it, you're not gonna do it right. And I enjoyed this in the theater, but I was like, it's not the right tone. And it wasn't until home video when I was like, oh, it's not a 80s tone, it's a 2000s tone, and it clicked.
Oh, this is such a 2000s tone. I can literally smell the Axe body spray and the shell necklaces all throughout this movie.
And what happens then?
Oddly enough, this was the 2009 flick, which is now 13 years old in 2022.
Wow.
How's that feel?
You know, that it's really weird, but when you put it into perspective like that, because I'm coming up on my 13th anniversary, and this was one of the first movies my wife and I saw in theaters. So,
about the same.
Yeah.
About the same here. I actually took the wife to our first date was to The Dark Knight. It was out at the time. But yeah, the next year, this was like, she's like, that wasn't our first, they're like, when I talk about this movie, she's like, that wasn't our first date. I was like, no, but it feels like it was a big first one. Like, it was we went total, like, gag you with a spoon, to make an 80s reference, all out on this date, like, out to dinner, out, like, shopping. I had purchased matching Friday the 13th t-shirts.
Nice.
And we had somebody in the theater take a picture of us in our t-shirts, which I still have that photo, so it's like, we are the matching couple. And I'll drop even one more bit of feels on you, is that was the date the wife wore this tea rose perfume. So now I always associate that smell with that date, that day, and this flick. So my favorite perfume is that tea rose that she still has in her possession. So it's like, this of all the Fridays that we have connections with and feels for, this is the sappy one.
That sounds like a stupendous date, if you will.
It's pretty good.
I don't have that like big of a memory of our date. I do remember getting a babysitter. I'm gonna out my wife. Here's some gross, actually not gross, whatever. But
too late, you can't take it back now. She doesn't listen to this, does she?
Every once in a while, but now the fans are gonna know. She is still kind of dipping her toe into becoming a big horror fan. She likes horror, but she doesn't have it in her brain like you and I do, like where it's just, we know that reference, we know that actor, whatever.
We're old zombies, and she just got bit 2 weeks ago.
Yes, and we were sitting in the theater watching the movie, and she made me a bet, and it was, why am I blanking on his name? The hip-hop mogul who goes out to the...
Dude, I don't remember hardly anybody's fucking name from this movie, and how I reference most of them, it's like... Oh, that's the dude that ended up becoming famous in that ghost show on the WB. Oh, that's the dude who is also in the Nightmare on Elm Street remake. The only one I can actually remember is Travis Van Winkle, because he plays such a great piece of shit, which means he has to be the nicest guy on the planet.
Yes, and he is. He is you know, in the Peace Corps and all kinds of cool stuff. But yeah, going back to that bet, she bet me that the hip-hop mogul would not die. And I was like, you don't know what franchise you're watching. She's like, he's funny, he's going to live. I said, no, he's the comic relief, and he's a minority. He's toast, you know? And needless to say,
just
I won
the bet.
Just a
big old Kane Hodder dead stamp across the forehead. Doom.
Yep. And another character actor missing. No. But... so you want to give the folks out in internet land just a brief plot synopsis, and we'll get underway.
Well, because of the incredible success of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, that is, I think, considered by most the most successful remake to kind of really relaunch getting everything else remade. Same guy that directed that, Marcus
Nispel,
yes, got the task of redoing Friday the 13th. And so this 2009 movie is essentially parts 1 through 4 mashed up in a 90-minute movie.
Yeah. Which I will say, that's probably my biggest problem with the movie, is it's not long enough. Like, once the ball gets rolling, the ball doesn't stop. Like,
it doesn't, and man, I did... Here's a question, if you can remember this, if you or the wife thought, because she was convinced... Mine was convinced, like, because this is, what, one of the longest, like, 20 minutes to get to the opening title of the movie, and she was super convinced. She's like, how is this going to sustain for 90 minutes? They're like, these already killed half the people. Like, what the fuck is going on? And then the credits, like, oh, shit, we got to start all over again. Yeah. Totally thought that this first crop of victims were going to be the movie.
If you know what, I'm probably in that boat. I probably did think that was what was going on.
Are you sure this is a dream sequence?
Right. Yes, it's a dream sequence, Rob Zombie, you son of a bitch. But, it's very, like, Death Proof. It's very Tarantino.
Oh, yeah, good,
you know,
good pull.
Like, hey, here's your lead characters, psych, swerve bro, got him, you know? But on a much less grand scale of writing ability. You know, like, you can tell they were like, hey, you know, Tarantino does that all the time. Let's do that. But for the Friday the 13th audience, you know, we're a bunch of bearded goons with shorter than normal attention spans. So it plays very well.
Yeah, and then this is... Like I said, this is 1 through 4 mashed up. So Jason is a living, breathing human.
Rambo.
Yeah. He's essentially Rambo with his last blood level tunnels that he has this throughout the entire campground, which I don't know if he dug those all out himself or was that part of just the landscape and he just added upon it. But he's just a guy that's just looking for Ma, who got her head lobbed off, and we never hear from that counselor again. We just see this dude grow up for 20-something years and life continues on this place. There's a pot farm close by that Jason may or not be providing protection for.
Yeah, he's the enforcer.
Yeah.
Fucking old man Jenkins or whatever his fucking name is. Like,
that's Mr. Voorhees right there.
Yeah, Elias Voorhees.
Pot farmer.
Now, since you bring that up, that's one of my least favorite aspects of this film is not necessarily the whole pot farm, but that stupid fucking Goomer. I am, like, so anti that dude, it's not even funny.
Really? I don't know. I don't hate him, but I guess I don't look forward to him either.
Let daddy have a little lick. Like, I just want to murder him, dude.
Well, he gets it, so.
He sure does. And every time, I don't want to say every time Jason gets his hockey mask, because they get lazy, like Jason Takes Manhattan. Like, the whole, I've got a mask that looks just like Jason's mask. But, you know, with this movie, both versions of him getting the mask, I don't like. Because there's the deleted scene where the pot farmer dude finds it and puts it on, and Jason cuts his head off.
Mm-hmm.
And then takes the mask off and puts it on. And then there's, well, let me just kill this pot farming dude, and then I find it under a fucking painter's blanket or whatever, and I just...
It's just a junk barn that he when he's killing this guy, he grabs his sack head and pulls it off in, you know, a rush. And they did a really good job of, like, not showing us, but just teasing us with what Jason's face looks like.
Which right, is through super, that mirror shot?
Yeah, that mirror shot with that quick flash when he pulls the sack off his head and then when he's thrown into the lake at the end of the movie. I didn't mind how he finds the mask. I'm not sure. I think I just fall into the camp of, I think the sack head look is actually creepier in this movie than when he actually gets the mask.
Yeah, well, and here's the other thing, you know. I'm not a Jacket Jason guy. And he's very Jacket Jason in this movie, and knee brace and all kinds of weird shit. But he also has those long, flowing Fabio tufts of hair,
blonde,
which you and I
hair.
Both... Yeah, we've always been in that camp of Jason with hair, not so much. Like, you want the prime, primo example of his hair's okay is, like, Final Chapter. He's got, like, 3 strands of hair. He does not have, like, a fucking head of hair.
Yeah,
and it's always kind of bothered you and me.
Yeah,
so,
he's not really Jason. He's looking more like one of the Hills Have Eyes toughs.
Which is funny because Derek Mears also plays one of them. So,
and there we go. We just now get to talk. We're 10 minutes, and we didn't make it to talking about Derek Mears, new Jason, and wow. What an awesome fucking dude. Didn't you provide security for that man?
I did, which is hilarious because Derek Mears is like bigger than you. What is he, probably 6'7", 6'8"?
Something like that.
I mean, that's
like
a
that.
Big dude.
Yeah, built and like a comedian slash like he's done...
MMA fighter?
Yeah, he's an MMA guy too. I was like, what a like layered individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a very funny dude. He has that improv group.
Yeah, he's in an improv group.
And he is truly underrated, I feel like, because people see him and they're like, oh, he's a bald, like, dude with no eyebrows that's super jacked. Like, have him carry a briefcase and, like, throw a punch. You know what I mean? Like, give him that role.
Yeah, he has a role in Never Stop, Never Stopping, the... like the parody pop star movie where he's a limo driver. And I was probably the only one we were like, ah, it's Derek. He's a limo driver. Like he's just, it's a nothing scene. He's like, he's a limo driver. He's also in MacGruber. He has like a throwaway scene where he gets killed by Val Kilmer in MacGruber. I was
nice.
Like, man, we need like the biggest shining thing that I can think of that he's in that we watch is his reoccurring cop character in Holliston.
Yeah, you really get to see him improv with Colton Dunn, and
he shines.
he's just great, dude. Like, that's the beauty of most of these guys who just put on masks and fucking stomp around. They really do have some range. Like, even Kane, you know, Kane was not a formally trained actor whatsoever, but
no.
He can act and he can do things.
Learn by watching.
I don't think he's a better actor than Derek, you know, but
I don't know. I've not seen Derek cry yet. When I see Derek cry, we'll find out.
Right, one day.
That's a, like
we
the
just
one
kill
ace,
his son.
That's the one ace up the sleeve that Kane has over Derek, I think, in the acting chops range.
Yeah.
I don't know who would be better in like a comedy off between the two.
Derek, I think, man. Derek is. I've watched some videos on YouTube of his improv group, which. I forget the name of his improv group. If you're listening,
I do too. I forget.
You know, just go on YouTube and type in Derek Mears improv, and they basically create a movie on stage for a live audience. They act it all out. They create the like synopsis, trailer, like all the like the first, second, and third act, and it's comedy gold. But moving back to Friday the 13th, and talking about how. Nispel and that like Texas Chainsaw Massacre getting its resurgence kind of led to this. It's a really weird mix, and I'm curious how you feel about it, because when Texas Chainsaw got remade, it's very like sticky and sweaty and hot, like it feels hot and gross.
I feel like
right?
I can but, smell
like,
it.
But at the same time, it has a very distinct visual style. Almost like a music video, real, like, clean cinematography. And we kind of get the same exact formula with Friday the 13th. Like, it feels like a Friday the 13th movie, but through the lens of, like, a WB executive. Like, hey, Jared Padalecki, Danielle Panabaker, you know, whatever, Travis Van Winkle. Like, put very, like... smooth, clean TV people in these roles.
Yeah, and also I so like mid-2000s, definitely 2009 thing is a Padalecki is wearing one of those t-shirts. It's like the like it was such a Dane Cook thing of that time to wear like these novelty business shirts. Mm-hmm. For places, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, that's as transportative as the shell necklace."
Yeah, it definitely does reek of Axe body spray, like you said earlier. It's very.
I do feel though, like I can smell like spring, like the lake. I feel like mm-hmm. I don't know. They're very good at visually giving me that sense of like I can feel. Where they're at, like I can feel like I'm outdoors in mild heat, but I feel like I feel like I'm in the woods,
right?
Watching Friday the 13th. So I don't know what it is, if it's just me or what, but I feel like I can definitely smell a Marcus Nespel movie.
This is an outside game. yeah, it definitely does have a very distinct look and feel. And you're right, it doesn't necessarily feel like summer, but it's got like kind of a warm, woodsy, just vibe tone to the whole thing. And it works really well, kind of melting it with that Texas Chainsaw 2003 tone of like, you know, when Padalecki is... searching for his sister, and you get like the old lady, which I believe was in the Texas Chainsaw remake, like people don't go missing around here. Won't they go missing, they're gone for good or whatever, like feels very Texas Chainsaw, like it's right on that edge.
Yeah, glasses, like beat the shit screen door, that's very Texas Chainsaw esque mm-hmm. for me. Even like the little like gas, like the mom and pop gas station that they stop yeah. at for goods, feels that, and to even go more Rambo, like we even have a local like podunk cop who
yeah.
straight up kind of Stallones Padalecki, and like I know you're looking for your sister, but you just probably need to get on out of here. I know you're just looking, I'm just looking for something to eat. I was trying to find my sister. Just get on your bike. Get the fuck out of here.
Get out of Crystal Lake.
Get out of Malibu, deadbeat.
Damn it.
So, another thing I was curious about. This is an interesting set of kills that happen in this movie. Mm-hmm. How do you feel? I don't know. I can't remember the dude's name, but the I can just think of his name because it's on the screen in Nightmare 2010. But Marcus Yun, is it Dewey?
Chewy.
Oh yeah, because that's the joke I have with the wife. She thinks everybody's Chewy. but how do you rank Chewie's death on, like, the brutality scale? Like, there's a couple of kills that are super memorable, and that's actually one that's kind of uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah, I was actually going to bring that up. That was one of the things I wanted to talk about was, for a Friday the 13th movie, a lot of these kills are super average or below average, but that one stands out because that one really feels like the Jason they were trying to get across, you know? Like,
yeah,
I've just got a hold of you, you're shaking, you know what I mean? Like, you're attempting to fend this off, but there's no stopping it.
No, it's just slow motion flathead screwdriver
right up under your fucking jawline, all the way up into your brain. It's really good. And then, you know, there's a couple other that are fun, but they don't have that anger that you can tell Derek Mears is trying to, you know, portray on screen. So, like, the arrow to the guy's head when he's driving the boat. Ew!
That's just funny to me.
It's, yeah, that one's fun.
That's the kill, like, you're not sure if you just saw it or if you just made that shit up in your mind. Like, man, I could really use an arrow through that guy's head right now trying to do his fucking Matthew McConaughey haircut bullshit. Yep. You're like, oh, did I do that shit with my mind or is that part of the movie?
But yeah, his death is decent because it catches you off guard and kind of like gets the ball rolling when it comes to this core group. But
how do you feel about Travis Van Winkle's? Because I vaguely remember, maybe it's this is my mind, but I vaguely feel like there was some mild cheering and laughing when he gets stuck on the back of that pickup truck.
Oh yeah, no. The crowd we watched the movie with cheered as well, but
yes,
it's not a good enough death for him. You know what I mean? Like,
how would you kill him?
I don't know, but he needed. You know what I mean? Like,
what if he got that Terrifier shit where he's strung upside down and sawed in half from nuts up?
Well, I mean, keep him with the like visceral hands-on kill. What if when he drops the gun and he's fucking on his hands and knees trying to find that gun in that puddle, Jason would have, like, drowned him, grind his face into the mud and just
put his foot on, you know, the back Victor of his Crowley, head.
Yeah, very Victor Crowley Hatchet 3. Like, but not go Victor Crowley level of cartoon, like yanking the arms off and that whole, you know what I mean? But, like,
how about
it felt like it needed to be, like, more personal, like, you know, you almost want the audience to go, Jesus Christ, let him breathe. You know what I mean? Like, you want something like that. Like,
what where if the audience... What if when he's down like that, he's trying to find shit, like, Jason just rolls up Randy Orton style and just punts the side of his face and, like, really dislocates his jaw, like, sends it completely to the side of his face, and he's kind of, like, choking on blood and shit, and he flips over, and then you just have Jason step on his throat and just crush it.
And yeah, or, like, really good facial damage because he's such a fucking pretty boy, like,
you gotta fuck
ruining
that face up.
His face so it's a closed casket, you know.
I definitely hope Travis Van Winkle hears this and, like, these guys really want to kill me and fuck my face up, my valuable face.
Not you, it's not your fault. You're a great asshole.
No, he's wonderful, and he has like he has my favorite line in the whole movie.
Dash Travis Van Winkle in parentheses.
Oh, but, yeah, that's what I want him to say. Can you just sign it like the closed captioned girly as shit scream?
Girly scream, Travis Van Winkle. So yeah, another thing that I want to talk about, which seems to be like the hot button debate when it comes to this movie.
There's
and,
what is it? I'm curious.
Like, you know, people who really like this movie or dislike this movie, the conversation always seems to come back to one thing, and that is Jason keeping a hostage.
Oh, yeah.
That is the hot button debate for sure when it comes to this movie.
It is in this
house.
How do
I feel? Yeah, how do I feel about it? Personally, I fucking can't stand it. I don't like it at all.
You and the wife share the same opinion then.
You know, but with that being said, this is a new Jason. This is a different Jason.
This is a Jason that explains how he has the shift ability.
Yeah, so certain things you just, you know, you start to accept as a part of the new Jason character. And I feel like I would have been more accepting had we gotten a sequel and we got to see a little bit more of, you know, how he does things. With just this one and done, it just makes me question, well, why did he do that? And you can't just be like, because it looked like his mom. Like, if it looked like his mom, he wouldn't fucking chain her up, you know? Like, because if he thought it was his mom, she'd be free to walk around. So that just, it's always kind of bothered me, and I didn't know where you stood on that whole situation.
I had no issues with it. I have a weirder nitpick about it. I don't mind that he takes the hostage. I totally am fine with the thought process for it. But I was, the only thing that fucking messed me up, I was like, how long was she down there? Like 3 months, 6 months?
Right.
Something like that. And I'm like, the fuck is he feeding her? And even go away, even a grosser route, I was like, she's cycled a few times. Does Jason have shit that helps with that? Like, I mean, I know stress and stuff like that can maybe pause it, but not for like four times in a row kind of a deal. I don't know, but that was just my first thought. I was like, she looks like she's only been down there a couple of days, and it's been months. She should look and be in a lot worse shape than she's in.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And then here's the other cool thing about this movie that is probably my favorite thing about this movie, other than the opener, how the opener kind of tricks you into thinking these people are your leads, blah, blah, blah. The movie kind of switches gears, and we're introduced to Travis Van Winkle and his merry band of fucking Goombas, but we get Danielle Panabaker. And she sort of steps in as this, you know, your new final girl. And you forget about the girl from the beginning of the film because the way that it's cut together, you assume she's dead until they reveal that she's not dead. But in your brain, once they cut back to her being in that cave, like chained up, your brain is still on this mindset of, well, I've had Danielle Panabaker as my lead for the past 40 minutes. So she is the lead. And then this movie gets you 85% of the way done and says, fuck this character you thought was the lead. They're dead now. Like, and that is fucking awesome. Every time I watch it, I almost forget that she doesn't make it. And then I go, haha, oh yeah.
Well, it doesn't help that they're, at least to me, they look super similar as well. Mm-hmm. Rigetti looks very similar to this other girl. And even every time it does happen, I have to like, that was the one he was looking to potentially hook up with, not his sibling. That's a whole different Pornhub section for that. But yeah, same boat. Kind of takes you by surprise, even on rewatchings. But I was curious also, why do you think we never got, is because, I mean, why didn't we get a sequel? Why didn't we not get anything post? If this had like a $70+ million surplus, you would think easily money people would be like, get something out and get it out now.
I think the problem is the people who are in charge of Friday the 13th tend to overthink things. You know, you look at the pause between Jason Goes to Hell and Freddy versus Jason, all the different scripts and like, you know, just, is this the right one? Is this the right one? Is this the right one? No, it's in development hell, blah, blah, blah. And then obviously like from Jason Goes to Hell to Jason X was 8 years or something. So I just feel like the powers that be that are in control, whether that's Sean Cunningham or fucking, why am I blanking on his name?
Victor Miller
or whatever. Victor Miller, Dick Miller. That'd be hilarious if it was Dick Miller.
Oh, Dick Miller. Wrong Dick Miller.
Just, I don't think that you get all these people in a room together and I don't think they can agree on a direction. And so they're like, well, someone will write something and then we'll see, you know. Well, writing something.
Are there like also three companies essentially with their hands in this? Like it was under New Terror Line. Inc. It was under New Line. And then under New Line is like Platinum Dunes. Mm-hmm. But didn't I? Yeah, this had some stake still in Paramount. Because I remember like the opening credits having all these fucking companies together with like that red font over it that looked cool, but I was like, maybe that's why. I was like, if one set of people can't agree, imagine three companies essentially is worth.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what happened. Was like, holy shit, this made a lot of money. What's next? And they're overthinking it. Like, let the motherfucker climb out of the water, and kill the next people who come into his woods. Pretty fucking simple. He doesn't need to go to Africa. He doesn't need to fucking, you know, on a, you know, Jason on a plane or whatever. Like, we don't need. And that was the problem. Is
get
they
off
looking.
My plane.
They just kept looking for where else can he go? What else can we do? And they missed so many opportunities to create more. You know, if we'd still be watching Friday the 13th movies if they came out every single year like they did in the 80s. Like, they were the Saw of the 80s.
Yeah, and I mean, now we have The Conjuring, essentially. I mean, basically that's what The Conjuring is. Like, it's kind of the same movie, but they just like, okay, well, now it's in England. Now it's in the States. Now it's in, you know, it's in the country. So, yeah, it's kind of that thing. They really like
changing.
And the
Paranormal Activity.
Yeah, they just like changing locations of places. I mean, I guess that's its extent of their doing something new. Like, just rinse and repeat, it's fine.
Yeah, and, you know, they really missed out on, I'll tell you, at least two ticket sales that they missed out on. Because you and I don't care where they put Jason, and we don't care what's happening. We're going to buy it.
Yeah,
we're going to see it.
He could be dieharding this thing. He could be on the wing of a fucking jet, and I'll be like, I'm going to go see it.
I mean, yeah, I got to check that out. You know, put him in the snow. Make it a found footage movie. And that was all that they couldn't agree, so they kept changing their minds. Like, do we capitalize on found footage? Do we put him in the snow? Do we take him to Africa? Do we do this? Do we do that? Do all of them. Write a script for every single one of them.
Do a found footage movie in Africa during global warming and it's actually snowing in Africa.
That's right. Scorcher 2.
Who left the fridge open? I mean,
again. Yeah. And that was the problem, right? Like, we needed more. How many fucking Texas Chainsaws have we had since 2003? You can't even.
They're still going.
I know.
We have a new one on the way.
And a game. And that's totally fine. But as a Jason fan, and even as a Freddy fan, you know, we got to be sitting here, sitting on our hands going, oh, you know what I mean? Like, when is our turn? We got a new Scream coming out.
When is going to be my time?
new new Leatherface, new Scream, new Hellraiser with a female lead Cenobite or whatever.
I've not followed any of that, so I'm totally in the dark on a new Hellraiser.
But there's all that stuff going on, and here we are. We just want Elm Street, and we want Jason, and we can't have it. So
I don't know the excuse. I know the excuse now is they're still in rights issues, still trying to get all that fucking hoopla mess solved with Friday the 13th. I have no reason or no idea what the reason is why Elm Street is still dragging its fucking feet and getting anything out there. What's its excuse? I don't have anything. Even like the Wes Craven estate, I think is not a non-issue in doing new cinema. So what's the hold up?
I think they're scared because
slashers are in, man. Halloween is fucking on fire.
That's true, but when they let Jackie Earle Haley step in on the role. There are people like you and me who, I'm not a massive fan of that movie, but I grew to accept his portrayal as Freddy. But a lot of horror fans are just like, no, that's not Freddy. And Robert Englund is too old and definitely just doesn't want to do it. And they don't have pockets deep enough to do it. So the question, you know, starts creeping in those boardrooms of, well, who do we cast? And are we going to lose our ass because Freddy fans are so gung-ho Robert Englund that the backlash from that first Platinum Dunes Elm Street thing, I think it's just got him scared. It's got him jaded. And
I mean, all I think you
I
have
want them
to
take the risk.
All I think you have to do is you set a budget super fucking minimal, give it like $10 million, maybe 15 at most for the entire budget. Very practical style effects, and you hire somebody that nobody knows really for Freddy. Yeah, and that is where I was going. I was like, you hire that fellow we know, Paul Bailey, because he has a Freddy, a classic Robert Englund Freddy look, but he has enough of himself in there to where he can, over time, kind of morph it into being his Freddy. So you start out accepting it because it looks pretty much like Robert to a degree and a lot of the mannerisms and stuff. So you're accepting it on face value, but then you're in his hands and he can kind of shape and mold how it's going to go from there. So then it becomes that.
Well, and here's the other thing too. I don't know if you would be completely opposed to this, but let's say they cast Paul Bailey and he does all the physical Krueger stuff. But we get Robert Englund in the sound stage, and we have Robert Englund and Paul Bailey record ADR lines of dialogue for Freddy together, to where we have Paul Bailey's voice, but we have a hint of Robert Englund in that voice. And then eventually we just don't
phase
use Robert
out.
Englund. Yeah. So it's your brain goes, that's my Freddy. And then as he starts being more dark, because that's the thing about Paul Bailey's Krueger, is boy, is he scary. And like, Krueger hasn't been scary in a hot minute.
He hasn't been scary since 1987. So
you're not even scary. Sorry.
So my first
wrong movie.
Yeah. My first impulse is to not want that. I'd be like, just don't even do anything, Robert, completely. Walk away from that and start fresh. But now that I'm thinking more in a minute or two about it, I'm like, yeah, that probably would be a good way to kind of ease more people into the acceptance of change. But going back to Friday the 13th, something that is not something that's a change, but something that is a welcomed return, holy bejesus, do we got some sweet, sweet nudity in this movie.
There is a plethora of nudity in this film.
Oh, is there? And it is nice.
Opening sequence nudity, naked water skiing, and
Willa Ford.
I
only remember her because she was like praised at the time of being the female Eminem, and then I never heard from her again.
The water skier?
Yeah.
Let me bring this up too, which is a crazy thing. Remix and I, who Remix hasn't been on the podcast for a hot minute because he doesn't get up early enough, but our tech man, Remix, and I, or Remix, Remix and I, our tech guy, Remix, sorry, blah, blah,
blah, I am Remix.
We were watching the very first season of Ultimate Fighter because I started him at the beginning and I wanted him to kind of watch all of these seasons where these fighters were being introduced and whatnot. First season of Ultimate Fighter, they have a female host. And I'm staring at this girl and I go, I know her. I know this person. And I didn't pull up IMDb or anything. Remix is off to the side. He pulls up IMDb and he goes, you do know her. Think about it. And I'm staring at this TV and then she came on and she did something where she put her arms up. And she was in like a, you know, girly tap out shirt or something. And I went, that's the naked water ski girl from Friday the 13th. Like, and it just clicked. And he was like, holy shit, you're right. And I'm like, yep. I never forget a face.
Yeah, or a set of breasts that have to be shown post-death, which that's always... I remember that being a chuckle, too. Like, when she gets the machete through the scalp, she gets pulled up and her head bangs the deck. And you get to see their breasts one more boobs, time.
They jiggle. They do a boing. Little jiggle.
You see that, and then, man, I couldn't even tell you. It's probably in the hundreds of times the, like, celebrity NSFW subreddit posts the other gal, what's her name, like, Juliana Gugh, or whatever her name is.
That plays Bree or whatever.
Yeah, the one that hooks up with Van Winkle. By God, that scene has been reposted and posted on Reddit 1.5 million times.
Mm-hmm.
And I always upvote it because it's wonderful.
You and I we've talked about that scene probably like 3 or 4 times just in covering the Friday the 13th franchise over this half of a year.
It's stupendous.
It is stupendous. It is as gratuitous as it gets. It's so gratuitous. It feels like where I was talking about earlier, how Shannon and Swift and Marcus Nispel kind of missed the mark on some of the things they were doing, like as far as making Jason more visceral, and then they kind of back off. It feels like they knew exactly where they were going with this sex scene. Like, you know, straight, like, grindhouse exploitation sex scene. This is like I Spit on Your Grave, but if you got off on I Spit on Your Grave. Like, this is like just sex and sex and sex. Like, it just never stops. It cuts away to outside and you think it's gonna stop, and then it comes back. Like,
yeah, you get people on the outside of the door like, hey, we got a problem out here, and we're going, fuck off.
My favorite is Danielle Panabaker. She goes, there's a guy out here. Like, I'm like, what does that mean?
He's calling dibs on a spit roast. I don't know what that means.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that sex scene is definitely the most egregious of all sex scenes across the board in Friday the 13th.
I mean, it's right there with Jason Goes to Hell. Like, that, those two have to be, like, the most X-rated of the series. Nah, the whole time, like, why couldn't we just get that from part 5?
Now, I bet if we got that uncut footage, we'd see some business.
that's in Danny Steinman's estate that his family has. Like, here's the uncut version of Friday the 13th. It's literally just the sex scene with Debbie Sue Voorhees stretched over 90 minutes. Enjoy.
Right, it's like 2 reels.
Just worn out reels. It's like, oh boy.
Smells like cigarette smoke and fish. Jesus Christ.
That's a visual smell image I never thought I'd have at this time of the day.
Right, 10 o'clock in the morning.
I'm up now.
So, yeah, another thing about this movie is, like, you brought him up, the podunk sheriff. And just like any slasher film, when the police show up, the day is not being saved. It's just another body. And the fella that is the police officer in this film, barely gets to get his seatbelt off, it feels like.
Like, all right, what?
Yeah, what's going on? Which, let me tell you, as far as visuals go, whenever I think of this movie, there's a handful of, like, publicity shots or just shots from the movie that stick into my head. One of them is when he is throwing the axe.
Yeah.
That's like, you think about that. The other one, which is so fucking cool, is him up on the roof of this house.
Oh, yeah, looking down. And like, how the fuck do you get up there?
Right? Well, he's fucking 9 feet tall. He probably just lifted his leg.
Just give me that kiki kiki ma 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 as he's slow motion jumping from the ground to the roof.
Oh, like fucking $5 million man or whatever.
$6 million man, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. $6
million
man.
This switch out the sound for the kiki ma 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 ma. I think we have a skit on our hands we can make right now.
It just makes me think of Dave Chappelle killing him softly. Crackhead jumping out of a tree.
I thought you were going to say like the robot chicken thing of the 6 million peso man.
Yeah, that's good too.
Just leaps over the border.
Jesus.
Jesus ain't got nothing to do with this place.
We pretty much covered...
Wrong franchise.
All the stuff that I wanted to get to about this movie, but, you know, sure we'll end up...
What about how this ends? How do you rank this... quote-unquote killing of Jason.
Yeah, you're right. We didn't talk about this yet.
I don't mind it. I think the dialogue is a little... It falls a little flat to say hello to mommy in hell.
Yeah,
but
I do
really, for whatever reason, my sadistic mind, I really like the sound and look design when Jason's noggin's just clunk, 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 clunk.
Mm-hmm. No, that death in and of itself is fine, but that is the big problem. These weird, like, gotta get the final word in things, like, I hated in Freddy vs. Jason, I hate that, like, welcome to my nightmare bitch or whatever, or my world bitch
welcome
or whatever
Welcome to my
she
world
says.
Bitch. It's the echo of that is what's going on here.
Exactly, and it just... It feels like it's two takes cut together, like, Jason, say hi to mommy, and then there's like a pause, and then, in hell. Like, I don't know what it is about it, but yeah, like you said, it falls flat. The delivery of that falls flat. It's not like punchy. It's not like, you know, it doesn't have like a,
joke.
Yeah, it doesn't have your joke factor to it or anything. And I'm not necessarily a fan of like a joke factor final line of dialogue anyway.
That's a line that should be really spoken ironically in 2009. And what makes it work in the 80s is how unironic it is. But it should be super ironic now how it comes off. And they're trying to play it like it's still 1986.
Right. You know, like... Jared Padalecki like lean in and be like, you know, I got half a mind to throw you in the lake, or you know what I mean? Some dumb, because he's got half his brain grinded off, or something. You know, some dumb shit.
Padalecki, I feel, should die in this too. He should have the sacrificial death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they really bait and switch you on that too, because you feel like he's gonna get toasted.
Yeah,
he's getting fucked up on top of that bus, and then. You know, he gets the Paul treatment. Like, he gets to come back for no reason. Although we are both firmly in the camp that Paul is toast, I think.
Oh, yeah, Paul's toast. And so are these two. This smash cuts that they killed Jason. They, for whatever reason, drag his, you know, his 7-foot ass out to the lake to throw him in it for I don't know what, why.
That's where he has to return. Didn't you watch Jason Lives?
That's not what... That's not the timeline. We're having Halloween issues here again. But they throw the mask in there, and that's totally where I guess my editing, writing mentality goes as well. They threw the mask in there. That's is what gives some kind of supernatural element to bring him back for whatever reason, because he's maskless, tossed in the lake, and then he busts through the dock with the mask on again and grabs what's-her-name, and then it's a smash cut to black, and they're like, oh, they're both dead.
Yeah, they didn't make it.
The next movie we should just pick up where these people are strung upside down, hanging gutted on the beach of this lake.
Well, why'd he leave his boss there hanging 10?
Girlfriend naked on the floor.
Predator 2 reference, deep cut. You can go back and listen to us cover Predator 2.
I think that was the last movie we did before we decided to take this journey to camp.
Might have been.
Was Predator 2.
And before, you know, we really started hammering down our format at some point. You know, what are we, like 40 episodes in? And then we were like, oh yeah, this is how we're going to do it. But
let's try this.
Yes. But overall, you know, this is a very fun movie. Definitely has grown on me because, like I said, in 2009, I was that asshole horror fan pissing and moaning about remakes, reimaginings, and I just didn't want to accept the new world, I guess, you know, and then fast forward to it coming out on Blu-ray, it's and then I totally got it. Grumpy old man syndrome. Yeah, you know, and now... So. It's weird because it's what, you know, 13 years later,
yeah.
I'm even more of an old man, but I'm not a grumpy old man in that sense. I'm much more open.
You've hardened in some areas, softened in others. And speaking of that and hammering out a format, did you have anybody that qualifies for the infamous Brown Panty Award for this film?
For me, it's just Daniel Panabaker. Or? Chewy.
You know, yeah, I couldn't really think of anybody. And then, yeah, if I was able to rewrite stuff, I would have a Padalecki sacrificial death at the very end. And then totally have Chewy, like, on the verge of death, but just kind of show up, like, after it's all went down, like, looking like beat to shit.
Like the stoner in fucking Cabin in the Woods?
Yeah, more or less, and like, the hell happened? Like, he just stumbles out, like, he got, like, a broken arm and, like, blood off, like, coming out of his ear and his mouth and nose.
Screwdriver hanging out of the bottom of his jaw.
Yeah, he's like an episode of ER, like, go ahead, ask me if it hurts. It doesn't hurt. Because
I was smoking that Panama Red and took those pills or whatever. Yeah, he's like, all fucked up.
It kept my heart rate low, so I didn't lose a lot of blood because I'm so relaxed.
The fucking screwdriver's like hanging out of his eye, too. Yeah. Like, it's just all fucked up.
It's sticking out of his right nostril. It's like,
yes.
It's trying to squish it and pull it out. I look like a bad day, okay? I'm just going to hold it and you pull it. All right, one. Oh, no, never mind. I just
think we're making that up, but if you go and watch the 2009 Friday the 13th and wait till after the credits, you see that Chewie did not die.
He's still just gargling on shit in the shed, like...
I wouldn't lie to you. Go check now.
I need my bongo. Can you ask your black friend to bring me the bong he loaded for the trip? Oh.
Let me tell you, though, before we move on to those next segments, it is a damn shame that we lose Chewie, because Chewie is comic relief, but he has some of the most believable, like, 20-somethings lines of dialogue. You know, when he's in the fucking garage, like, you have never touched any of this shit. Like, he just...
of all the people who doesn't really... who are kind of forgettable, he does have some X factor that makes you remember him. Even in his... you literally see him on a computer screen in the Elm Street remake, but he has something there too. He's just... I don't know what... also, sweet deal to get in both franchises.
Mm-hmm.
That's super cool. But he just has some X factor. You're like, what? You want to... You just... he sticks in your head.
Yeah, for sure. Much like the screwdriver stuck in his, but...
I'm okay, though. I'm gonna be back in the secret... and it's gonna be good. It's a Phillips head screwdriver, yeah. It's twisted and put out. It's been for 6100 power hands. Yeah, it's all good.
But I suppose now that we're done discussing Friday the 13th, 2009, it's time to move on to the next segment, Evil. So, which one is that?
Well, if we've grown to enjoy this film, we gotta transport back to 09, back to Grumpy Roger, and try to channel some of that anger and hostility towards this remake, and hear from folks who had to get on the Zon and tell us how much they hated it with the Amazon Uno Star reviews.
Hated it.
We got a few, surprisingly, for this one. So we'll start off nice and light here with S.G. Peterson on June 27, 2014. He says, one star, a review not for the films, but for this unholy mess. Amazon, you need to get control of this damnable mess of reviews. Every review for Friday the 13th ever put to any format is under the same title, and it's a mishmash of the 1980 version and the 09 remake, in quotes. I'm interested in know about the quality of the new Blu-ray transfer and the extras, if any, therein, but only for the Blu-ray. It is near impossible to sift through this mess and others of the like with all the remakes these days. Please, for the sake of everyone's sanity, can we get some sort of better organization going on with these reviews?
This dude's just fucking one star reviewing Amazon.
Yeah. Like, he's
you guys
not
suck.
He's not reviewing the film. He's reviewing the quality of the reviews of the film. And two people found this helpful.
Yeah, because you know what? It is a fucking giant mess. I'll tell you, there was a... What was I looking up the other day? I was looking up because Arrow? No. Some company put out all the Dolomite movies. So I wanted to buy the original Dolomite on Blu-ray. And I was looking at the reviews.
Was that Vinegar Syndrome? The Vinegar Syndrome?
It might have been Vinegar Syndrome. And and it's got like a cool box. You can get a box with it.
Yeah.
But basically all the reviews are like, this DVD is edited. The gut removal isn't there. The sex scene isn't there. Blah, blah, blah. Like,
this is happy-go-lucky edited motherfuckers.
Mm-hmm. So there's a bunch of wrong reviews for wrong editions on, just if you just are looking at Dolomite, you get a review for every Dolomite. And I'm like, I need Blu-ray specifics.
You know, I like Dolomite. I have no issues with Dolomite. But I really, if I had my choice, I'd really rather own the His Name Was Dolomite that Eddie Murphy made. That is a phenomenal movie, and it's a crime that it's not in any kind of physical format to purchase anywhere, because it is so good.
Allow me to make a plug then real quick, because I'm not one for bootlegs. I really am anti-bootleg, and there are certain...
We only permit it if we have literally no alternative out there. Mm-hmm.
There's a fella on Facebook, and you can look him up. His name is Roy Dam, and he puts out these crazy editions of things. Like, he did the Mr. Sandman cut of Halloween, where he cut together Halloween 1 and 2 and put in all the TV scenes. Or he'll cut together Kill Bill 1 and 2 and make it one movie.
Nice.
Etc. Does all these things. But when it comes to Netflix originals and whatnot, he will release Blu-rays. And he did release a Blu-ray of My Name is Dolomite, and I ordered it. So I am currently waiting for that to arrive. Is it a licensed, legit release? No.
But do we have any other choice? No. Would we take a legitimate choice? Absolutely. Yes. Every single
Because I want special features. But I want it on a disc format in case my internet goes down or Netflix loses the rights or whatever. I want
Netflix
to be able to watch
it. Netflix just decides they don't want us to have it no more.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we're about. We are in control of what we want to watch, and that is a damn fine, inspirational fucking movie. Damn, that's a good movie. But going back to a movie people didn't like, go to Matthew Reddington on April 29, 2013. He says, one star, Friday the 13th, part 1000.
In space. Wrong movie, sorry.
Hondo's review of Rocky V, 1000. The characters
Simpsons
in this
reference deep cut.
Actually, I went Spaceballs there.
Oh, okay.
The characters in this movie were boring and total cliche. I couldn't find any reason to care for any one of them. It wasn't scary at all.
And see, that dude missed the point like I did when I saw it in theaters. Because I was like, well, it was all cliche and bullshit. And then I'm like, oh, yeah.
It's all cliche and bullshit.
That's what it's supposed to be. That's exactly what it's supposed to be. I was missing the point on the franchise that I
What's
love.
This? February 09, Roger DeMarco. It's all cliche bullshit.
Yeah. I never did. You'll never find me on Amazon.
You'll never find boom, 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 a one star like mine.
Mine. All about the Benjamins reference.
You'll never get that anywhere else.
No.
We will string together some shit that does not need to be strung together. So, I'm curious what you thought of where and the point this is. This is from Chris Garvan on November 1st, 2017. He says, one star, awful, never made it past 50% of the movie.
50%. Okay, so if it was a VHS tape and it was dead in the center.
Where did he say, I quit? I feel...
Water skiing.
Really? Water skiing? I was going to say, like, I either want to say the
stretch.
Gas station or when they're playing beer pong.
Could be beer pong. Suck and or blow and suck or whatever the fuck.
Shoot the boot. Shoot the
Shoot
boot.
Shoot the boot.
He saw Chewie drinking out of his fucking sneaker. And he's like, no.
Pussies of the world.
All right. Next up, we have Trip Mullinax on October 28, 2020. One star. It was okay.
A man after my own heart.
This one, I want more from this, just off their username. This is from God's Chosen.
I feel like we've come across this.
There's nothing better than a religious fanatic giving horror movie reviews. A new fun thing I've found when I am cruising for one star is if I find someone with a very religious username, is click on their name and see other things they've left reviews for. And
other things they find helpful.
I think I did it for this guy. I know it was somebody recently I looked at, and they literally only purchased this movie, and the rest of the shit was like, you know, like, household items, some rando camping equipment, like nothing movie related at all, and Friday the 13th.
He had to buy Friday the 13th because he was thinking about going camping with his fucking
on a retreat. Yeah. But God's Chosen says one star, lots of profanity, too much profanity, and sexuality.
Yes.
Maybe he doesn't realize that's not a one-star rating. That's a glowing review rating.
Yeah, many people have found this helpful.
Actually, no one did on that one. So I should have clicked finding that very helpful.
You should have.
I can't believe
you did that.
I'll have to go back and find God's Chosen again. So next up on October 6, 2020, this is from Matthew Gimble.
All right.
Gimble!
He keeps it steady.
One star, pure garbage, not in a campy way. If you saw this earlier in life, I can understand the nostalgia factor. But as a 33-year-old man watching this movie for the first time in 2020, it is undoubtedly one of the worst horror movies ever made. 100% pure garbage from start to finish. There's literally no single piece of positive feedback I can give.
Whoa. Dude, think about that. This movie is coming up on being 13 years old, so there is a nostalgia factor for it. What the fuck? Like,
yeah, someone born when this came out is now a teenager.
Yeah, yeah. My son is almost a teenager.
Yeah.
Your daughter, almost a teenager. Like,
I'm not going to think about that. I'm going to move on to KCM6868 on December 12, 2019. One star, what a waste. Don't get me wrong, I love this movie. However, I can't see spending any money to rent or buy this version. There's nothing really good or special about this version. I am thoroughly disappointed. Maybe she got a rated copy or something. I don't know.
Disappointed because you have to pay for it? Is that's the gist of this one? Like,
pissed that she had to pay for this version. Maybe she was wanting the unrated version.
The killer cut.
Yeah, the killer cut. Maybe she was
wanting
that.
To be honest, Evil, I've never asked you about this, but do you own an R-rated cut of this movie?
I do not.
We just have the Blu-rays, right?
We have the Blu-rays, but I bought the DVD when it came out, but it was the killer cut. It had a big space on the bottom of the DVD cover where Derek Mears had signed it. So I have the killer cut on DVD, and whatever I'm guessing is that also on the Blu-ray. I've never seen the rated R cut, except I guess in the theater, and nothing really sticks out different to me. I don't know what is different.
I was going to say, next time I visit, we should go to Vintage Stock, see if we can find an R-rated cut of this on DVD, and just buy it. I mean, $10 at most, and then we should watch an R-rated cut.
I feel like there's probably... I want to put money on that the R-rated cut is possibly on that like 3-pack that we talked about previously. It has this, Freddy versus Jason...
And Jason Goes to Hell or whatever?
Yeah. I feel like that might be our best shot at finding a rated copy of this.
I want to know the difference now. I'm sure I could just Google it and be like, oh, this is cut. But I don't want to do that. I want to watch it and see.
What's the deal with Friday the 13th killer cuts?
Yeah, what is the deal?
What has been cut? And is it part of the killer? All right, so to wrap up the Amazon one-star reviews, we had to go with Julie Stanton here on November 1st, 2019. She says, one star, glorified porno. This is nothing but a glorified porno. My teens have watched a few other rated R movies with us, like the two newer It movies. So when they really wanted to see this while carving pumpkins at Halloween because Jared Padalecki is in it, I agreed to rent it. Thank goodness I watched two, or I wouldn't have known what a piece of trash this movie is. The little bit we watched was constant unnecessary F-words and graphic sex.
Yeah.
I'm aware
so
that
they didn't
even
get through the title sequence.
I'm just picturing, fuck.
Fuck it, let him watch, right?
I'm aware that an R-rated film will have... I lost my space. I wouldn't... this little bit of F-word. I'm aware that an R-rated film will have the F-word in it and it may have love scenes.
love scenes.
But if you took the F-word out of this movie, half the dialogue would be missing. And the sex scenes were just gross with bare boobs in the first 10 minutes and graphic sex in the first 15.
Yes.
If you're a young dude, you'd probably have no problem watching this.
Yes.
But my older teen felt very uncomfortable, probably because you were just in the room.
Yeah.
I found online that one of the producers even walked out on the premiere because there was too much sex in the film. Just be aware of what you're getting yourself into before you watch.
Speaking from, the perspective of a person who did watch a lot of R-rated films with his dad and mom...
Did they include love scenes?
Oh, yeah.
Hard love.
It is awkward. It's awkward.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what happens is, or at least it did for me, is I wait until the sun goes down and my parents go to bed, and then I take that VHS tape and I finish that movie on my own.
And then you finish on your own.
Well, I mean, this is pre-masturbation era, like 9-10. Like, it was just, we talked about this last week.
The last known time we were as males known to have clear, filtered thoughts, ruled by consciousness for the last time.
Yeah. But, just that forbidden fruit of oh boy, my parents shut this off. Or, I can remember watching The Dentist and my dad making me cover my eyes because she gives the pool guy head. And I was like, I've seen boobs. I remember vividly telling my dad that, we've gone down this road. And my dad's like, you haven't seen anything like this. And made me cover my eyes. But the way he said that, you haven't seen anything like this.
You don't want none of this, Dewey Cox.
Made me wait until he went to sleep. And then I watched the movie. And I went, oh, That's what he's talking about. I didn't know what the fuck was going on. I didn't understand what the fuck was going on, but I'm like, well, okay.
Your dad was straight up Tim Meadowing you, and like, you don't want none of this, you don't want none of this drug Dewey Cox. It's not for you.
Try me some of that, Dennis.
What is it? It's great. So yep. It makes everything seem wonderful. You don't want none of this.
I'll take all the head I can get, Alex. For
to quote Booger, give me head till I'm dead.
Mm-hmm. So that's the end of the one stars, eh?
You can't go out on a higher note than somebody super pissed about the boobage and lovemaking sequences in this film. Me.
I want to make love to you on my own.
You know, I don't think I've...
Down by the fire.
I don't remember referencing it as a love scene in probably well over a decade, so thank you for bringing it back, Amazon one-star reviewer.
Like, instead of hip-hop music, there was, like, saxophone. Like a fucking Cinemax late-night movie.
Maybe we should try that if we could find a way to edit that and put it on our channel. Just blur out or put our logos over the restices and just drown out all the dialogue with heavy saxophone. Put in that put in that sax that's always in the Lethal Weapon movies and just put that over it.
Yeah.
Boop, boop.
Oh, yeah, saxophone makes everything way more sexy, I think. At least that's how movies work.
But shit, if in commercials real life there too.
If in real life there was saxophone music playing while I was trying to get it on, I'd fucking beat the saxophonist or break my radio, whatever.
I mean, it's not as bad as, you know, if you're in like a hotel and there's a mad wild party going on outside of said hotel and you're like... Are they out there cheering and making noise because they can see in the window, or are they just enjoying the show going on out there? I wish there was a saxophone playing right now instead.
You got the dude from Lost Boys like standing at the foot of the bed.
Just squirting baby oil at the same time.
Yeah, it makes for an interesting evening, I'll tell you.
Happy anniversary!
Well, so now that we're done with Amazon one-star reviews... What does that mean?
It's time to play the game.
It's time to play the game. Time to play the game!
It's all about the game and how you play it, and I got nothing glorified porno.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
I literally had no song lyric ready this week, and... The whole last one star just completely derailed my thought process of anything other than X-rated things at the moment.
Man, yeah, that was a great one star review. So
I should follow her and see what I want to know what else that person bought. I might have to just follow her and see what else she's fucking reviewing and doing on Amazon.
You should do it, and then it's a reoccurring. We got reoccurring characters now. Even if their review has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
That's my ultimate goal, if I can find the ultimate one-star reviewer.
Yes, which you have a couple. Like, you have a couple names.
I've had a couple. I think I'll call them the gold star reviewer.
There you go. But for those of you who are new to the podcast, welcome. And you are listening to the Deep Cut Podcast, which the prop game... sort of...
It's exclusive to the podcast.
And it encompasses everything about our deep cut mentality. And that deep cut mentality is something that not a lot of people know about. That is a deep cut or a reference, a quote, whatever, that is not something that everybody says is a deep cut. So,
and we're with this avid collectors, so we're combining those things. So
yes.
What's something that's a deep cut prop if you're able to take one of these... props home and keep on your own personal collection, what would you take?
Can't be Jason's hockey mask, can't be his jacket. I mean, I guess it could be his jacket. A lot of wardrobe.
Mine is wardrobe related this week.
All right, do you want to go first then?
Sure, I will go first. I initially was really wanting the hockey stick because I had up my own
left like your penis.
Because I had a tie-in story with that. Is I used to work with a guy who I would always, we would give shit back and forth because I was a hockey fan, still am a hockey fan, and he would give me shit over being a hockey fan and not knowing fuck all about football. So he was actually, him and his lady was meeting up with us in the theater when we got to go see this movie. So when dude pulls a hockey stick off the show and goes, ah, real man sport. I was just like, how you like that, Lavelle? Real man sport. But in the end, I'm going to end up taking what Chewie wanted to become in a reincarnated life. I'm going to take one of the ass buttons on those shorts.
You know, that's not a bad prop. And both of our props seem to center around this voluptuous female. So my prop is the handy cam. Because if there is a tape in there, that's some raw footage.
We can watch the copy. If you had made a copy, we could watch the copy.
I'm going to need to catch a glimpse of those warlocks.
You're not going to see much of her, though. You're just going to see, like, POV of Riding Van Winkle.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's also interesting. But, you know, it's hooked up to the TV in the background, and so you do get some shots of her. So, like, you've got her on top of him and then a TV in the background showing her riding him. That whole sequence, obviously, is, like, the standout sequence. Like, when we covered Jason Goes to Hell, that tent sequence is the standout sequence. The only thing that would have made the sex scene in Friday the 13th, 09, better would be if Jason had come through that window and killed them during sex.
Yeah, speared both of them kebab style again. I mean, he was right there. I don't know why they didn't do something like that, but or the bed folding from Versus and smash both of them together, look like the fucking Thing or something with arms and legs sticking out of places where they shouldn't be. Yeah, that's the only thing that scene was missing that would have made it like t-shirt iconic level.
Like he comes in through the window and grabs her by the fucking back of her head and like yoinks her off of Travis Van Winkle and breaks her neck and she falls on Travis Van Winkle and then he fucking kills them both. He swings an axe down,
cuts her head off and embeds the rest of the axe in his throat. And he dies like Chewie with the screwdriver.
I didn't get none. I'm still on the shed fishing your chair.
I can fix this. I wanted the
I'm the wood wizard.
Because I don't know. I don't know. This was 09, so I don't know if that's got a mini tape in it or if that was recording straight to a little card. I don't know. I'm intrigued.
A little micro SD card.
Yep. I can get 4 minutes of footage on this. It's all I need.
All super blocky and grainy looking, too.
Yeah.
This looks like got shit.
Got the Paris Hilton night vision effect on it.
It'd probably look better than that because it's well lit, but I feel like it'd be like the motion of what's happening would make everything like super blocky and blurry.
Oh, yeah.
But you'd get the audio, so maybe you could just, if you're into ASMR, it would be beneficial for you.
Gross.
Oh, yeah, I'm gross. You want the tape, but I'm gross because I went the ASMR route with it. Okay, yeah. I'll accept that. I'll bear that cross.
We hear Travis Van Winkle's juices sticking to thighs. I'm good.
Call me God's chosen now.
Well, now that we've done our props and we've done our Amazon one-star reviews, I suppose there's nothing left to do but get the hell out of here and come back in a couple of weeks.
As we wrap up officially, as of this point in time, we have no other movies to discuss. But we can't end this franchise without one last installment, the last gasp of the Friday the 13th franchise, something that it would just engulfed our lives for a good 2+ years and more or less led us to becoming part of the Slash and Cast podcast network. We're gonna take one more Friday the 13th journey and talk about the game next week. Not the game we just played, but the official Friday the 13th, the game.
Be prepared to listen to us gush for an hour about our love an appreciation for the Friday the 13th game and all the people and friends that we have met and become personal acquaintances with because of this game. It's going to be a good send off to the franchise, and then we'll move on
to another
franchise.
We're looking at you, Mangler series.
Yeah, I can't wait to cover all the Manglers. But on that note, I suppose we should probably get going, because after all, there's a lot of movies out there, and somebody's got to watch them. So why not us, right?
Roger, your tits are stupendous.